Goldman Sachs buys over $400 million worth of Bitcoin as Wall Street arrives. Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. In today's episode, we're going to talk about Wall Street coming for Bitcoin. What does the new allocation mean and how should we put it in context? We'll also talk about CPI, rates, and the Fed. All right, let's go to the first headline. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley take stakes in U.S. spot Bitcoin ETFs in Q2, filings show. Now, this is definitely monster news, but it's not the amount that we're concerned about or even the name of the investment banks that are getting involved here. Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley are two of the largest investment banks in the world, but they are not the first to get involved. We know that many of these large investment banks, these global investment banks, have had trading desks for Bitcoin for a while. JP Morgan is one of the main participants in the entire ETF ecosystem in terms of being an authorized participant and getting Bitcoin physically into these managed trusts. So the headline that Goldman Sachs is now a player in Bitcoin is actually not a new one, but the filing that they now own over $400 million of the spot ETF, it's material because what we are seeing now are the largest players in the world declaring small allocations to Bitcoin. And I say small because $400 million, it isn't really going to make a dent on the entire Goldman Sachs asset management spectrum. But once you start to see that line item in portfolios, that line item can grow and it can be mirrored by other institutions. So you guys have heard it from us for a long time, that we expect an enormous wave of institutional allocation into Bitcoin, therefore driving the price above $100,000 and toward $1 million over the next several years. This is the exact example or the exact reason why we are saying this. Because not only do we have Goldman and Morgan taking positions in the ETFs, but in the last 24 hours, we also got headlines that said the Swiss National Bank and other Nordic central banks are allocating more of their balance sheet to MicroStrategy stock, which is a conduit for Bitcoin as well. So that line item, and this is also an important thing, that line item existed before these spot Bitcoin ETFs were legal in the United States. That means that to get a Bitcoin allocation, these European central banks were going through MicroStrategy. And are they allocating now to the new Bitcoin ETFs, or are they building on that existing line item because it was already approved by compliance? It was already approved by the board. It's the latter. And we do see these large institutions building on positions once they start getting them into the portfolio and onto the books. You guys know that recently we have flagged the allocations from both the Wisconsin and Michigan state pension funds into Bitcoin. They're very small allocation, just a few million dollars each. But the allocation is enormous in that it is the first time Bitcoin is breaking onto these portfolios. Now, when we think about the size of institutional asset management, just think of the size of fixed income and equity markets around the world. We're talking about several hundred trillion dollars of capital. Now, if we get 1% of several hundred trillion dollars of capital coming into Bitcoin, this is, let's say, somewhere between a $1 to $2 trillion allocation. Now, the size of Bitcoin's market cap is $1 trillion right now. So where is the room for $2 trillion in additional capital? That $2 trillion is really only going to be fighting over 1 to 2 million coins. And that's where the astronomical numbers for Bitcoin, when we're talking about projections over the next decade, they can sound silly to some casual observers, but to you, the educated observer, the Bitcoin Layer viewer and listener, you guys understand that for $2 trillion additional capital to fit into an asset that is currently only $1 trillion in size, and of that $1 trillion in size, we know that really only 100 to 200 billion of that is readily available for trading. That the 2 trillion and 100 billion don't match. And so something drastic has to happen. And that thing that we expect to happen is a massive increase in the price of the available Bitcoin so that the supply can meet the demand. The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by Unchained, the leader in Bitcoin financial services. Unchained empowers you to take full control of your Bitcoin with a collaborative multi-sig vault where you hold two of three keys and benefit from a Bitcoin security partner. Purchase Bitcoin directly into your cold storage and eliminate exchange risks with Unchained's trading desk. Unchained also offers the best IRA product in the industry, allowing you to easily roll over your 401ks or IRAs into Unchained without giving up control of your keys. Unchained also offers the best IRA in the industry, allowing you to easily roll over your 401ks and IRAs into Bitcoin, all while keeping control of your keys. Don't pay more in taxes than you have to. Talk to them today. Go to unchained.com/TBL and make sure you use code TBL for $100 off when you create an account. Now, we know that the capital that comes into Bitcoin, it will be satisfied. There will be a price at which each one of those transactions clears. But when you have a mismatch of demand and supply that we do anticipate for Bitcoin, and we don't even just have to project or dream about it, we can look at what's happened to Bitcoin in previous cycles in which more capital than available supply came into the market. 2017 and 2021 were two of those examples. So we're looking for that to continue. It already has. Going from the teens to the 70s was our first wave of that happening. We do not believe that the current wave is over. We actually believe it's just getting started. So get your volatility hats on. Get your 100K hats ready. So getting your brain ready for six-figure Bitcoin is really the first thing. And then when six-figure Bitcoin arrives, then you can take off your 100K hat and you can get your own stitching kit and put whatever number in front of those zeros that you want. That is the way that we should approach this current cycle, not with an idea that Bitcoin will hit 125 or 250K. While those numbers are in line with what we expect, they shouldn't limit your imagination when we think about how much potential capital can come into Bitcoin when we see headlines like Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and the state pension funds for the two largest Midwestern states, and the pension funds from Michigan and Wisconsin coming in and starting to allocate. A few million dollars or $400 million isn't going to do it, but $10 billion, $20 billion, $50 billion at a time, from an allocation perspective, those types of numbers are what we do expect from larger pension funds or larger investment banks as they get more and more involved in this new asset class. Just wait till you get your first announcement from a Middle Eastern sovereign wealth fund how much that they already have. It won't be that they're buying. It will be that they already own $10 billion worth of Bitcoin. We feel like an announcement like that is due sometime within the next year. Now let's go to the price. In my previous video, I talked about how Bitcoin's consolidation could last well into 2025. Now, a couple key points here. Number one is I said that it could, not that it will, or that I believe that that's the path of least resistance. Right now, when we think about Bitcoin and where the price is, I have these yellow lines intersecting in about March of next year, and the green and yellow line intersecting at the end of 2025. Just to show you guys that if Bitcoin chops around for the next year, it would be in full context of the chart. So that's why I said that it could consolidate and just go sideways for another year, because the chart tells me that if it does that, almost nothing on the chart would be violated in terms of trend, resistance, and support. But the descending trend line here, which has connected the several lower highs over the course of 2024, if we get a break above that trend line, you will see Bitcoin really get some escape velocity and maybe engage in one of its typical parabolic moves. So that could also happen. So when I say that Bitcoin could go sideways for another year, it just means that the chart tells me that wouldn't violate anything. But it could also easily break above its descending trend line and break out and then go much higher towards six figures. So don't think that when I say something could happen that that's what I believe or that's my base case. What I'm trying to do is interpret the charts, interpret what I see on resistance and support, and then we don't just take that as religion. We take that as a guidance for risk management. Remember that even though we're not a trading service here, it's our goal to assist you in your own risk management, your own asset allocation. So if you're looking to get long and short, you look at our trend lines and you use that as context for how you might approach the market. Do I go just ape in long here, or do I dollar cost average? Do I sell here in order to pay for something, or do I wait because it's just broken out? Maybe do I wait another couple weeks? Those are the types of decisions that we hope to assist you with without giving you explicit trading advice with some of these trend lines. So if your expectation is an imminent breakout, well, it shouldn't be, because the chart tells us that we have some pretty significant lower highs that we've made over the course of the last several months, not to mention a huge, really red move in the last few weeks on Bitcoin that serves as overhead support, because people that were fearful last week but didn't sell, they might be able to sell if it gets back up to 65,000, 68,000, and that will keep some resistance on Bitcoin. So my goal here with this chart is to zoom out, show you weekly candles, show you this consolidation range potential, show you that there are three outcomes. So, you know, not to provide zero value here, but the three outcomes are sideways, up, or down. And I want to show you here how it could go sideways, how it could go up, or how it could go down. Now, a break below the ascending yellow trend line would be worrisome down to the green trend line. A bounce at the green trend line would be totally in context and probably a healthy thing. A breakdown below the green trend line would be very ugly for Bitcoin and would probably violate an enormous amount of narratives. One of them being that Bitcoin is on a continued exponential adoption run. If Bitcoin dipped below that green trend line and fell down into the 30s, below where we were when the Bitcoin ETFs were approved, that would be troublesome. But you guys know that with my start to this video and talking about the institutional allocation and all your sewing kits at home with your hats, that that's really not where I expect Bitcoin to be over the next year. Now, real quickly, one more chart on Bitcoin. We're going to go over to our beautiful macro bond charts that you guys can find over at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe for our free weekly publication. Twice a week, we publish free content on our newsletter, and TBL pros are also able to gain access to exclusive research. So thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe for all of these macro bond charts. And Bitcoin here in no man's land, just to show you that one of these ascending trend lines, it's broken, the one that was in place from the breakout late last year, and now I just view Bitcoin as in no man's land. It's going to chop until it doesn't. So I know that's not a great context for where it's going to go, but once it's broken and violated that trend line, it has to repair. This whole concept of damage and repair on the technical charts. It's a very real concept that real traders and asset allocators, investment managers are looking at. When they see technical damage, the damage means that the emotion in the market is broken, meaning if there was previously bullish momentum, it's over. And so it's damaged and it needs time to repair. And what else does it need to repair? Confidence. And confidence comes from new buyers or existing buyers that put in the floor. So where will the floor be for Bitcoin? Right now, it's right below 50. Does that floor hold? Do we build off 50? Do we build off of 60? And how long can we consolidate there before the next catalyst brings it above? So this idea of an imminent move to 80, which we were really flagging for a few months ago when Bitcoin was touching in those 70s and starting to break out above that descending trend line that we showed you, but it just got rejected each and every time. So we're not imminently looking for that type of breakout. Instead, more consolidation. Now let's switch gears to the United States economy. This morning here on Wednesday, August 14th, we had the latest CPI reading. Now, inflation came back below 3%, another sequential decline in this year-over-year reading. Now, with inflation below 3%, the Fed is somewhat happy. They don't have it back at 2%, but they have it below their whisper number of 3%. That's giving the Fed a green light to start cutting rates in that they're not afraid of 4% or 5% anymore. Their risk is 3.5%, and they can deal with that, especially with unemployment. So we've told you guys for many months, the Fed is going to be cutting rates this year. It has arrived. Now in 5 weeks from today, the Fed will get its first rate cut. The Wall Street Journal confirmed this today that the hurdles are all gone for the Fed's rate cut. We knew this. The market was pricing it. We also told you that the money markets are not incorrect. They're never incorrect once we get below that 6 to 8 week time horizon and you get a move priced into the market. So we'd like to observe the Fed funds futures market and other overnight index swap markets in order to derive what we believe the Fed is going to be doing. And it's not us looking at some magic eight ball or looking, you know, into some voodoo prediction set. We're looking at the exact swap rates that are going to be traded or exchanged on the day before the Fed meets, the day the Fed meets, and the day after the Fed meets. And in that way, we know exactly what the market is expecting to happen, and we deliver that information to you. Okay, so for US inflation, let's take a look at the heat map. 2.9%, you see that in the top leftmost corner of your screen. That is the total year-over-year reading. And across the top row over to the right, you can see 3.7 all the way to the right. What that means is that 12 months ago, the reading was 3.7% year-over-year inflation, and you can see how that has gradually fallen to 2.9% year-over-year inflation. Now look at that second line item. 5.7% a year ago for housing, that's fallen to 4.4%. It's up slightly from last month, but it's down from where it was a year ago. Now, here's where I want to stop and talk about inflation. Now, here's the thing about the Fed and how they're looking at inflation. They're looking at the headline number, seeing it below 3% and happy. But if inflation from the housing perspective stay sticky in the 4.5% range, that's going to be a real challenge for the Fed because they're going to have unemployment but also expensive housing, and that's really between a rock and a hard place for the Fed. They have to cut because of the threat of a recession, but if they cut too much with inflation in the housing sector at 4.5%, it's going to pose a lot of challenge to the Fed from a public perspective. The public is going to be really upset about both things at the same time. The Fed is not going to be able to win because it wants to satisfy those that have been recently unemployed, as well as those that are seeing a large increase in year-over-year housing costs. So the Fed is going to be really in a challenging place and in a no-win situation, I believe. Here's a look at the housing component on a time series basis. We have the Zillow rent index in orange for context as well. So there you see CPI housing and CPI headline, both falling and trending lower. The Zillow observed rent index did lead that move a couple years ago, but now they've all stabilized. And so if they are all stabilizing, 3% inflation, 4.5% on housing, 3.5% on rents, that's going to be stubborn inflation. It's going to pose a challenge to the Fed, especially if they have a problem with unemployment. Another CPI chart for you here, CPI coming down, but that is sending debt to GDP higher. Now, how are these two things related? Debt to GDP is the amount of treasury debt relative to GDP. Now, GDP goes up with growth and inflation because it's nominal GDP. GDP, as it goes up from inflation, it reduces the amount of debt to GDP ratio because the denominator is increasing. So as inflation goes up, debt to GDP comes down. That's saying nothing about the path of treasury debt, which, as you guys know, is going up as the U.S. continues to borrow 6.5% budget deficits a year. So debt is going up, but it's going up at a rate that's higher than GDP, especially with inflation not being the boost that GDP needs for this ratio to fall. So hopefully you can see here that the spike in 2021 and 2022 in inflation helped bring down debt to GDP as GDP increased due to the inflation component. Now let's get to money markets. Let's look at the path of expectation, that CME crunch that we were talking about for you guys, that we get for you via Bloomberg and Macrobond. So what we see here is that the first cut is priced in for September. We don't know if it's going to be 25 or 50. At the Bitcoin layer, we don't really have a strong bias right now. I think that the unemployment report that comes the first week of September, about a week and a half before the Fed's meeting, or about 2 weeks before the Fed's meeting there, that will basically seal the deal on 25 or 50 for September. So don't make much of it. And right now, it'll probably chop in between as the market is also waiting for that. Now, we've told you that 2% of rate cuts are coming, and at least 2%. So when does the market think those are going to get here? Really by mid-2025, June, July of 2025. Right now, guys, I would say that we would tend to agree with the market where the market is priced. Okay? Before we had 4.3% unemployment, we believed that the mild path of cuts was priced right. Now, a little bit more aggressive path of rate cuts is priced in, and we would be biased to agree with the market here. But too early to say how quickly we're going to get 2% of cuts, but it's really not too early to say that we're going to get about 1% of cuts by the end of the year. How we get there, 25, 25, 25, probably that's the path of least resistance right now. We'll wait and see. And by 25, 25, 25, I mean September, November, and December. We have three FOMC meetings left. Now let's talk about the U.S. Treasury market and the strength of U.S. Treasuries. A lot of analysis going around about weak Treasury auctions, but it is completely out of context, and I will give you the example. Last week, we had a Treasury auction in the 10-year part of the curve. The yield going into the auction was 3.93. The auction went, quote-unquote, terribly. It yielded 3.96, so a 3-basis-point tail. Now, a 3-basis-point tail is a bad auction. It means that there weren't enough bids at 3.93 or 3.94 or 3.95, and so the bids relative to where the price was were very weak. So the Treasury auction last week was very poor and came in at 3.96 instead of 3.93. But Treasuries today closed the day at 3.83, so 13 basis points lower than where the auction stopped. And multiplied by about 8 or 9 duration sensitivity, that's a 1% gain. So somebody who bought last week's 10-year Treasury at 100 now has a security worth 101. Now, I can show you that the strength of the treasury auction or the weakness of the treasury auction in the moment statistics. But how does that moment compare to what happened the next day or the next week? Yields are heading lower in the United States. So any weak treasury auctions are probably just a function of the supply-demand dynamic in the 1 to 2 hours going into that treasury auction. And I know this from experience because I have participated in treasury auctions on behalf of large institutional clients. Their goal is to get allocated to treasuries. They look to the investment manager to allocate paper. And so when we say, okay, you want $250 million of 5-year notes, we'll go and buy them for you. Then it's our decision. Do I buy them right now in the spot market? Do I wait for this afternoon's treasury auction? Afternoon in New York, still morning on the West Coast at 10 a.m. So are we going to allocate in the auction, or do we feel that, okay, there's a large auction, let's wait and see, let it tail, and then maybe we'll go get our paper 20 minutes later? And that is, folks, how it works. So a weak treasury auction might happen 20 minutes later. The paper is purchased that was waiting for the auction to go by so that those investors can get allocated and get that paper. So do me a favor. Anytime you hear somebody mention a weak treasury auction without a few days of price analysis before and after the auction, throw it right out the window and come back to TBL. That's all for today. Thanks for watching and listening. Make sure to subscribe on YouTube or your favorite podcast platform. We really appreciate your rating and review there. Make sure to subscribe to our free research publication at thebitcoinlayer.com/subscribe. And please check out our sponsors, unchained.com/TBL for $100 off when you create an account at the leader in Bitcoin financial services. We'll catch you guys next time.